Okay, so this week is Parashas Behaloisra, and the end of Parashas Behaloisra is a very fascinating section. There is the story Va'tidaber Miriam, the end of the parasha, the Aaron b'Moshe al oides u'isha ha'kushis asher lokoch ki isha kushis lokoch Moshe married isha kushis. Okay, which literally means a black woman. You see that? You see that? What black lives matter? That's what it says in the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu. He took an Isha Kushis. Rashi says he didn't take she wasn't black. It means just like everyone is. Actually, Rashi turns it into a racist statement. That just like everyone admits that a black is a black. What does that mean exactly? I think what Rashi means to say is something very. I don't want to say something very nasty. Just like everyone admits to the blackness of a black, so too, everyone admitted that she is a raving beauty. Usually this beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. You go to a wedding, see a kala. If you secretly ask the people at the wedding, is she a pretty girl? Is she an attractive woman? So some people will say yes, some will say no. Why? Because beauty. What? Okay, so ask the women. Forget, don't even ask the men. I once overheard a conversation. I couldn't believe what I was saying. I once overheard a conversation of women talking among themselves about. They came into a house. They didn't know that I was there, and they were looking at the pictures. There were some pictures on the piano of members of the family. And I happened to be overheard their conversation. I couldn't believe what they were saying. What they were saying. And basically, women, they the first thing they look at is they look at what other women look like. Look, I can give you a lot of examples of this. Not proper for the share. In any event, this is Rashi. Rashi only says that when it comes to a woman, this is a very strange pasuk. I don't know how else you can look at it. Is that when it comes to a woman? Let's say you ask other women, is this woman attractive? Some will say yes, some will say no. To each his own. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. But the wife of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was no one that said that she was not attractive. Undisputed. It's undisputed. Ki Isha. What? So the Pasha says yes. There's a lot of discussion. She was the daughter of Yisrael. Some want to argue that she was an adopted daughter of Yisrael. She was the sister of Basia. Basia and Zipporah were abandoned children. And Paro, they found them. Paro, once upon a time, Paro and Yisrael, they were buddy buddies. Paro and Yisrael, they grew up together. And they found these two. They came across these two abandoned children. And Paro adopted Basia, and Yisro adopted Tzipora. Moshe was raised by Basia and married Tzipora. Isn't that strange?
No, he wanted someone like his mother.
He wanted it. It's right. I mean, well, were they sisters? So they said it was. I don't know. It's a lot. There are a lot of unanswered questions. But this
so
is a,
was Basia black too?
If you will translate the word that kushis to be taken literally black, then very possibly that's an indication that Basia was black also.
Okay. But it's not the only way.
There are a lot of this is not what we're talking about now. I don't want to talk about, there are a lot of variables, a lot of very interesting questions, but this is a very popular medrash that Basia and Zipporah were sisters, they were abandoned, they were taken off from the street. Paro adopted Basia and Moshe adopted Zipporah. Yisro adopted Tzipora. That's one of many interpretations.
That would have made her much older than Moshe Rabbeinu.
So today they'll tell you that it's a good thing to marry a girl who's older than you. Okay, in the world of Shidduchim, age, there are a lot of, okay, in Hanami, that the age was not necessarily a factor in Shidduchim in ancient times. Whatever it is. Let's go for that. Let's not focus on that. So the point over here is, he married this Isha Chushis Lokoch Vayomu. And what did they say? They according to Chazal, the gist of the Lashon Hara was in Moshe Rabbeinu, he's not a good husband. He's a bad husband. because he is poyresh from his wife. He does not fulfill the obligation of ona. Ona min has marital relations, he has an obligation to his wife. He does not fulfill that obligation because he was a poyresh, because since he has to be standby for the Shechina, for Hashem speaking to him at any moment in time, so Moshe Rabbeinu is in violation of his basic duties as a husband. And she complained. She spoke Lashon, Moshe is not a good husband. He may be good for the klal, he's good for the klal Yisrael, but he's not a good husband, he has a flaw. He's not perfect. Moshe Rabbeinu is not perfect. So Hashem was not happy that Tzipora, that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe. So what did she say? Vayomru. Vayomru, who's Vayomru? Vayomru means that she and Aaron, she was not the only one who spoke Lashon Hara. Aaron also joined in. Doesn't mean that he spoke, but he listened. He tolerated it. Hashem does not accept tolerance of wrongdoing. Remember Bush, that was one of his fatal mistakes, when he went after 9/11, immediately after 9/11, his first speech, he said to the world, he put the whole world on notice. You're either with us or you're against us. That was a big, big, in hindsight, every historian will tell you that was a horrible speech. That was a terrible speech. That basically, the world is on notice, we have terrorists, Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, you're either with us or you're against us. You either join the coalition and you contribute to hunting down this man, or that means if you don't want to join, you are also a terrorist. That's ridiculous. You can't go put the, you're not the balabas in the world. And you can't, and that's not the way the world works. You can't go tell the people just because they don't want to participate in hunting down Osama bin Laden, it automatically means that you're a terrorist. If you tolerate terrorism in the world, then you're a terrorist. But by a klal Yisrael, that midah is really true. That midah, even though that's not a midah for the world, that's definitely not something which appears to be acceptable in the world, to go say to a world, everything is black and white, either you're with us or you're against us, it's not accepted. But by in Yadus, it is to a degree accepted, such a principle. The Chedo Egel. How many people worship the Egel? 3,000 people. Who were they? They were the Erev Rav, the newcomers. And we ad hayoim hazeh suffer. Why? Because we were tolerant. Let them do what they want. Don't bother us. It's not us. It's a tiny, tiny minority. A teeny, teeny minority. And because we accepted it, so look at the consequences. Ad hayoim hazeh. The Chedo Egel. So this principle of you're with us, you're against us, in Yadus, to a degree, which has to obviously be nuanced, is something which we accept. It's not something you just look away from. But over here, Aaron did not speak, but Aaron heard, and he was tolerant of this complaint that Moshe is not a perfect person. He's not the model for an art scroll book. You know, an art scroll book? I don't mean to be a critic. I love art scroll books. I find the people who say that the art scroll books, they glorify the Gedolim, have never read a biography by art scroll. That's really the truth. People ask them, did you read the book? Did you read the book? And the answer is almost always no, 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 no. They didn't. So keep your mouth shut. First, read all the art scroll biography books, and you'll have a very different opinion. And they do actually try very hard to show the frailty, the humanity of the Gedolei Yisrael. It's really the argument they make with the article books is not a valid argument, and anyone that says it should first be challenged if he actually read the book. You know, it takes a long time to read a book. I don't know about you. It takes a long time. You have to have a Yishuv Hadas in time to sit down, to go from cover to cover, not just to read a few pages here and there, a few chapters. Spend the time, read all the books. When I was younger, years ago, I had a little more time. I used to read these books very, very carefully. And they're all very different. They're very different. They're very fascinating. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky wrote a fantastic book. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Shamsher Fol Hirsch, Rav Dessler was a very interesting book. He was more like a study, a PhD thesis on Rav Dessler. Rav Gustman, I'm surprised they didn't put it in Cherem. Rav Gusman, they wrote on a book, unbelievable book. They said everything there is to say. It's a short book, a small book, but Rav Gusman, you know Rav Gusman was? He was mamish from the Gedolei. He was the biggest of the biggest. And he was a Zionist, by the way. And you know, he went to the Israeli, the Yom Yerushalayim parade. They write it all in the book. They're not embarrassed. They write it in the book. They write all the things that people don't want to say. They're not afraid. Art school. Read the books. Before you criticize the art school books, read the books. Read a few of them. And then come back and we'll have a conversation. They're fantastic. And they make it very clear also, Rabbi Zlatowitz, Gedalia Zlatowitz, they're not in the business of Lashon Hara. The purpose of the book is inspiration. These are not biographies. We're not over here to record history and to judge anyone. These are books of inspiration. We want to take out parts of their life and use it as an opportunity to inspire people. We're not here to give you their whole life from A to Z and tell you every avera they did. It's none of our business. You want to go to some secular press, they want to go tell you everyone, they want to take you to all the garbage about people. Good for you, so go read those books. That's not what we're here for. We're here to give inspiration. Everyone will give a din v'cheshbon. We're not here for that. That's not the purpose of these books. You don't like it, so don't read the book. But the truth is, the books themselves, you actually read the books, they don't hide anything. They don't try to hide anything. They say what needs to be said. What doesn't need to be said is not said. It's not like they whitewash. It's not common. I know once in a while there is some whitewashing, and they get sometimes it's an honest mistake, and if it's done deliberately, people let them know about it. So, it doesn't seem like today they have anyone's so naive and so foolish to try to rewrite history. It's a very different nuance. But over here we have a very powerful story in the Torah where Hashem, where Miriam speaks Lashon Hara about Moshe by basically saying that even though Moshe is a very great person in public, he's a great politician, he's a great leader, he's a great person for the Klal Yisrael, he's not a good family man. He's not a good husband. He's a failure as a husband. He doesn't do his basic duties to his wife. And she said this to Aaron and to other women, and Aaron was tolerant. He didn't call over Miriam and tell her, you know, I think you should keep your mouth shut. None of your business. He didn't say that. He said, I hear what you say. I hear what you say. And Hashem was very, very disappointed. Very disappointed. Ad kdei kach rash, the pasuk says, basically that Hashem spit in her face. That's what the pasuk says. Aviyah yorek yorak b'fanech halosti kalim shivasimim. If her father would spit in her face, would she not have to go in shame for 7 days? Alachas kam v'kama. When Hashem spits in her face, she should have to go in hiding for 14 days. So the pasuk says that she spoke Lashon Hara by telling the world that he's not a good family man. Aaron listened, and Hashem spit in her face and said, keep your mouth shut.
Can't you say she was doing it not just to talk Lashon Hara? Had a motive in speaking.
Every single person who speaks Lashon Hara has all of the excuse in the world. It's l'toeles,
yes.
It's for a benefit, it's therapeutic for me. It's the person is a danger to the world. The world has to know that he's an evil man. Everyone always has excuses for Lashon Hara. There's no such thing as a person saying Lashon Hara and saying it's pure Lashon Hara. There's always an excuse. And yet, 99.99% of the time, it is awesome.
So
not to deny the fact, you need a shaduchim, that's really one of the places where Lashon Hara is really relevant is by shaduchim. People need to know what they need to know before they enter into a shaduch. You always hear this again and again and again. People felt hurt that they were not told certain things. And then you'll go back to the person, how come you didn't tell me? They don't really have a good end. They say Lashon Hara, or all of a sudden you're makbid on Lashon Hara. To go tell me all the garbage about someone else, that you're not makbid, this you're makbid on. So when it comes to shidduchim, there are hotlines out there to know what to do. There are incredible leniencies in giving over the dirt when it comes to shidduchim. But outside the realm of Shidduchim, you're not going to find a heter for almost anything.
So how do you explain Miriam Hanavia?
That's right. How do you explain? How do you explain? Why isn't it Lashon Hara for the Torah to tell us what Miriam did? It's Lashon Hara about Lashon Hara.
What?
This opens the bigger question. This opens the bigger question. How can the Torah ever tell us about the shortcomings of man? Isn't the Torah in violation of its own principle of Lashon Hara? And how could the Torah tell us that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara? That itself is Lashon Hara. It tells us that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. No, so what is the answer? Toeles. It's for the purpose of learning from their mistakes so we should not repeat those mistakes and become better people. Add to the mix, they're no longer alive. There's another whole concept. This is everything I'm telling you now is controversial. Everything over here is controversial. There's another head that is there an issur to say Lashon Hara about the dead? The person died. Now let's open up the classified files and let's bring up all the dirt. Mm. The guy's dead. It doesn't harm him. His family, if you'll say, but it harms the family. Okay, that's a very good point. Let's say it's already like what they do in government. In government, they declassify secrets after 50 years, 70 years, all different types of things in government that are declassified. Why do they wait 50 years to declassify information? It's no longer relevant. And a lot of the information is very, had it been revealed at the time, would have been very embarrassing, very damaging. But in the world, the way the world operates, this all in every country is like this, is things are declassified. Mashayaseh hazman lo yaseh haseich. That when time heals all wounds, when time passes, then there is a value. The person's reputation, the person's contribution has been established to such a degree where it's impossible to cause him any harm. And now when we reveal certain deficiencies, adarabah, it only makes the person even greater because it shows that they were human and they had deficiencies. And yet, look how great they still became. They were able to overcome their deficiencies. This is something which is in, you don't have to come onto Torah for this. This is something which is accepted in the world. In the world, there are certain icons, certain people who we glorify, and their contribution, their success has gone down in history as being who they are. And then, after 50 years, 100 years, the government declassifies information. Wow, really? he did that. Today would be scandalous, some of these things. And yet we find it either entertaining, or we find it to be historical, to understand the times, or we use it to show his greatness, to show that despite this and that, that's the way, unless you want to go take down all the statues in the country. Okay, the people today, the Mishugoyim out there, to take down the statue of George Washington was a racist. He was a slave owner. Benjamin Franklin, you go through the whole Thomas Jefferson, to rip down, destroy the fabric of this country, Meikoroi, there are people like that. These are crazy people. These are sick, sick people who are missing screws. What can you do? You see that, you know, you what you say is correct. Mordechai, am I saying you have no point?
I hear. But it still leaves us with a question. How could Miriam and Amia, with no real toeles, talk Lashon Hara?
You're asking a good question. I don't have. I mean, what was her purpose?
Yes.
It must have been she had a purpose. Chazal tell us the purpose. Chazal say El Daru Meida. When did she make this comment? She made this comment when Eldad and Medad were discovered to be prophets. And she said, Oive, I feel bad for their wives. Because they're going to suffer the same fate as me. So she made this statement maybe for a reason to discourage women, to make women aware, don't marry the best bachur in the yeshiva of Nevuah. Don't marry the best bachur in Moshe Rabbeinu's yeshiva, because he'll end up being a prophet, and you, as a wife, are going to suffer. So she felt it was a toeles to tell women, don't aspire to marry certain types of men. She felt it must be a toeles. She said, when Eldad and Medad, she said, Oyve, I know their wives, we went to school together. What a tragedy. Because now what's going to happen to them is what happened to me. it's going to happen to Tzipora. It's going to happen to those women that I know. These are my friends, the wives of Eldad Umedad that were misnabim b'machaneh. It's a tragedy. What's going to happen to them is going to happen. What happened to Tzipora is going to happen to these women. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, although he's very great in the eyes of the world, he's not a good husband.
But Tzipora did tell Miriam what happened.
Did Tzipora, how did Tzipora, no, it doesn't say that anywhere. It doesn't say that anywhere that Tzipora told, how did Miriam know this?
Oh, right.
I don't know that part, piece of the puzzle. How did Miriam even know this? I don't know. But she did obviously know it, there was a purpose. She was trying to save a woman from entering into a bad marriage. Don't be impressed with all the glitter of being married to the Gadol Hadar, because he'll never be home. He'll never be there for you, for the children. Okay, I remember when I went to rabbi school many years ago, when I imagined in my crazy mind that I would want to be a rabbi, I imagined I went to rabbi school provided by the National Council of Young Israel. They had a rabbi. I told you the story many times. There was a rabbi. The rabbi, you know, the rabbi was, I tell you, it took for hours what I learned in that. And those, one of the most amazing experiences in life, those classes that we had, those classes, all thanks to the credit to the National Council of Young Israel, Rabbi Pesach Lerner, Tzadik Yisrael Alam. Pesach Lerner is an amazing person.
And Rabbi Hammer.
Rabbi Hammer, people don't, they should give them the Nobel Prize for their contribution to Klal Yisrael. And one of the great rabbis, the rabbi you see, he painted the scenario. You're a big rabbi of a big shul, very wealthy, Malabatim, and it's June 18th, and get an invitation. You're one of your biggest supporters in this beautiful shul where the rabbi is marrying off his daughter in the Pierre. And he wants you to be the Masader Kedushin. And he wants you to speak under the chuppah. And there's going to be at this wedding all the politicians and all the rich people and the who's who of Klal Yisrael. And you're going to be the Masader Kedushin. A lot of COVID, right? You wear a tuxedo, bow tie. You know, you make sure you come. You're going to prepare a speech like none other. You're going to speak under the chuppah. And then you come home and your wife says, by the way, you know, June 18th, our son is having his 8th grade graduation in the local yeshiva around the corner. You know, the simple people, the poor people, you know, it's not a very very dignified, some yeshivas are very dignified, shemazlika. Graduation, the 8th grade, the yeshiva doesn't have their act together, it's a poor yeshiva. You know, whatever. Don't forget, put on your calendar June 18th. You say to your wife, wait a minute, that's the day of the wedding. The wedding! The grand wedding! So who are you going to go to? So this rabbi, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to go to the wedding. I know, I'm just telling you what's going to happen. I want to just paint for you a picture of what's going to happen. You're going to go, you're going to say to your wife, listen, Balabas, you know, this is my job. You're going to go to the wedding. You go to the wedding. And you're not going to go to the graduation. Fast forward 5 years. Something's going to happen in your shul. Not everyone's going to be so happy. There's going to be a board meeting. Your contract is up for renewal. And the Balabas, you went to the wedding on June 18th in the Waldorf, the Pierre, he is leading the force to get rid of you. And he votes at the board meeting to not renew the contract, to get rid of you. And he's on the phone the night before calling up all the Balabatim, soliciting votes to get rid of you. And he votes to get rid of you. No, does he win or not? Whatever happens, happens. Fine. Your son, to whom you did not go to his graduation, will never, ever, for the rest of his life, forget that his father was not there at the Shemazeldika Yeshivisha below standard 8th grade graduation. He'll never forget it. He's not going to have a complaint against you. You're his father. You pay the tuition, you pay his bills, you do everything for him. But he'll never forget that. He will never forget that everyone else's father was there and you were not there. That's what's going to happen, whether you like it or not. Are you ready to enter into such a profession? Are you going to tell me now that you're not going to go to the wedding? You're a liar. You're going to go to the wedding. You're going to legitimize going and not going to your son's graduation.
But every profession you have choices like.
Not no, yeah, maybe, yeah, yes and no. Listen, all the other parents are there. All the other, what do they do? They're not, what, they're collectors? They have jobs.
And your child's having graduation, you have an important
that's right.
Trial the next morning.
Everyone else, so that the lawyer's not going to be there? The lawyer's not going to be there? Somehow a rabbi, somehow more so than a lawyer, a doctor, you have a guy dying on the table, let someone else fix him up. Your patient's on your middle of surgery. No, you call in someone, listen, I have to go to the graduation, you stitch him up. You're a surgeon. A rabbi somehow is not going to leave, but the surgeon in the middle of the surgery will say to his assistant, to the resident, you finish the job and sign my initials on his flesh. That's the mitzias.
All the time.
Okay, running out of time. Now how do we even get into this over here? I forgot. Moshe Rabbeinu, he was criticized. Yes, that's the question. What was the legitimacy for Miriam to say Lashon Hara in order to prevent these women from entering into such a marriage? But in the process, she said that Moshe Rabbeinu is not such a great family man. Okay, now that takes us to something which goes on. Unfortunately, I already wasted a lot of time telling you all these stories, because there's a lot of incredible toichim over here. I have over here this book called Headlines. Okay, we did this already a few times. Headlines 3. This book, each one gets better and better. Unfortunately, it takes a few years for each one to come out. You know what the milo of this book is? Every book is that you have one fellow. He writes, he does research, he puts together something, and he writes it down, and he makes a nice save. This book is basically a transcript. It's not a transcript, it's been reworked. It's written very well. It's really written. It's a pleasure to read. And usually how well it's written, especially this volume, particularly this volume. And basically, he has a show. This is a very wealthy person, David Lichtenstein. I don't know if he's a rabbi. I don't know what he's. He appears to be a very wealthy, super wealthy person who loves to learn, and he knows quite a bit. It's quite a Talmud Chacham. I listened to one show Mitzvah Shabbos. Okay, he's very marach. He talks a lot. And he likes to add a lot of things into the show. And they spend a lot of money advertising the show. And the show deals with controversial topics. And he does his research. And he lays out all of the background. And then he interviews people, rabbanim, very distinguished rabbanim who are experts in this particular field. And they all have what to say. And usually many of them completely disagree with one another, and there's an audience listening. They claim there are 1,000 people listening live, and the downloads over the weeks and months that follow are the numbers that they write are totally, it's hard even to believe the number of such high numbers. And basically it takes on a life of its own. This is not a single person writing something. This is a record of a public debate, like a disputation on a topic, where there's enormous interest, and there are many people listening, and there's a lot of give and take, and it gets even very, I wouldn't say violent, but it gets very passionate conversations, and when it gets passionate, there's a lot of ideas and proofs, things that are being thrown around in the public, and the product of this what's being written up is quite a record of a lot of ideas, and based upon this Pasuk parasha, we have this topic in this generation where are you permitted to criticize Gedolei Yisrael? What are the rules and regulations about saying about Rav Moshe Feinstein, revealing a secret to Rav Moshe Feinstein that people today would not be so happy to hear? about speaking about Yachad Kamenetsky, the Gedolei Yisrael. Now, you can say about, now today, unfortunately, in our generation, right now, we don't really, many of us feel that there are very few Gedolei Yisrael that are of stature. That's the reality. I'm not trying to make, there are very few good. But when you look back in the previous generation, okay, it's not we who were much younger then, we still live with an aura of who these people were. And if you want to go back another generation, and another generation, you want to go back to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you want to go back to the Briskerov, you want to go back to the Rishonim, the Abarbanel, you know, you're going back way back, and you're going back to Yehuda. And you want to go talk about their personal lives, and you want to go talk about their halachic decisions, you want to go to the Holocaust and talk about everyone's favorite topic, Gedolei Yisrael told people not to escape. He told them not to escape. He had an opportunity to go and run away to America, run to Eretz Yisrael, and they were asked, what should we do? And he told them, no, stay put. You're safer here. And they were killed. Are you allowed to criticize these Gedolei? Is it proper to criticize them? Is there what to criticize? Yes or no? How do you deal with all this? How do you deal with emunas chachamim, having faith in talmidei chachamim, viewing them to be perfect, and yet acknowledging that they are regular human beings and they make mistakes, and some of the mistakes they've made are very significant, at least from our perspective.
What's the problem? We go after a rabbin with no Sanhedrin today, so he passed him that way. It doesn't mean that he was wrong.
These are all the questions. What I'm telling over here is just super abstract because there are so many different.
But it wasn't a halacha decision. It was
so that's also part. We have a principle. Now he gives a story over here. He has a lot of stories on it. He gives over here where a woman went and she asked, I think he's very open here, right? Yes, she asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe, if I'm not mistaken. She was dating a fellow person, and I don't remember all the names of the people involved, and this woman, she was dating a person, and she really didn't know if she should marry this person. There were a lot of issues if she should marry this fellow. So she went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and we sent a letter, I don't know all the details, and Lubavitcher Rebbe told her, marry him. Yes, marry him. I'm telling you my advice, marry him. She married him and had a horrible divorce. Okay, it happens, right?
But that's not a halachic
decision. Right. Now here's the point. She got divorced, so it didn't work out as divorce. She then subsequently met another person and also had very serious doubts should she marry this second man after going through the experience. So she went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe to ask the Lubavitcher should she marry the second person. So the person that was close to this woman said to her, what are you crazy? He gave you, last time, he gave you, in hindsight, terrible advice. It ended in divorce. So why are you going back to ask him a second time, should you marry the second person? Obviously, in this matter, not taking away from his greatness, which is undisputed, obviously for you, it didn't work. For you, his advice didn't work out. Don't you think it's not a good idea to go back?
You can't use that much. It's like going to a doctor and being treated for cancer, you die of pneumonia. So you blame the doctor? There's so many factors involved.
You're right. There's a lot to be said about this. I'm telling you.
Advice.
You're right.
It would have worked out.
You're right. You're 100% right. But I don't, let me just tell you the story. The punchline of the story is really what makes this reason. There's a reason for the story is because of what comes at the end of the story. And that's what's very disturbing. And that is, this woman shared a dilemma. She went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe told her, marry him. She married him. Got divorced. She meets someone else later. She has another dilemma. Should I marry him? She goes back to Lubavitcher Rebbe. A person who knows her very well says to her, you're crazy. You had a dilemma by the first husband. You went to Lubavitcher Rebbe. He gave you the wrong advice. At least from my perspective, you know, you can say whatever you want to go say because it didn't work out well for you. It's not supposed to happen, you get divorced, right? That's not the goal, to get divorced. So now you're going to repeat your mistake, you have another person, and you're going to go back and ask the same person for advice. You know, there are a lot of Rabbanim and Gedolim out there. You want to ask advice, go to someone else to ask advice. I don't think he's the right person because you struck out. So here's the point. No, so you can right away argue, I agree with you. So what? So what's so terrible? So you go again, no, what's so terrible? If you feel confident, here's the disturbing part of the story. She says to this fellow, yeah, you know why he gave me bad advice? It's my fault. I didn't present the dilemma 100%. I should have expressed myself much more and presented all the nuances of the dilemma. Mm-hmm. So that's a very disturbing thing to say. Because the person who's writing the story basically is saying it's not true. You don't know. When you presented the question to the Lubavitcher Rebbe the first time, first of all, if the Lubavitcher is going to give you an answer, it's his duty. It's his duty. When someone comes to ask you a question, a life altering decision, it's the duty of the person that is giving you the answer to know, understand exactly what you just don't off. Just, oh yeah, yes or no. That's not the way it works. If you're a responsible person, we have a right to assume that the Lubavitcher Rebbe fully understood. If he gave an answer, he fully understood what the situation is. This woman over here is blaming herself. Again, you can say whatever you want to say. That's a very dangerous thing. The story is a very unpleasant story because if the woman would have said, you're right, it turns out they gave me bad advice, but like my mayor said, I have one disease, I die from another disease. I don't blame him. I don't blame him, though. It was unforeseen circumstances. So therefore, there's nothing wrong. He gave me great advice. Why did we get divorced? No, got divorced. But I seek his counsel. But to go back and to say, yeah, Taka, he made a mistake, but it was my fault. That's not a healthy approach. That's a very dangerous. You want to say no? I'm sure some people will tell you no. That, all right, fine. Let's just run through a couple of things. First thing, Moshe Rabbeinu. Here is where a lot of this comes from. Why we view Gedolei Yisrael to be infallible. Where does it come from? I never knew this, but it's a pasuk. It's an incredible pasuk. The pasuk says, and this is a very challenging pasuk. Pasuk is by Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah to the Jewish people, Hashem said to Moshe, "V'gam b'cha z'mesh chachma, v'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam." Moshe said, Moshe said to Hashem, who am I to give the Torah to the Jewish people? Hashem told Moshe, listen, you're going to give the Torah to the Jewish people. I'm giving you a bracha. That it's their obligation. They will believe in you le'olam. V'gam b'cha. Moshe is the model. The model of the Gadol Hadar. Moshe Rabbeinu is the model of the undisputed Gadol Hadar. The pasuk says, "V'gam b'cha ya'aminu," they will believe le'olam. The Meshe Chachma says, "How in the world can the pasuk say such a thing?" Moshe Rabbeinu is a human being. Moshe has free will. Moshe can one day get up and tell them nonsense, apikorsis. And Hashem is telling them that the Jewish people have to believe in you no matter what you say, le'olam. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu is a malach. Moshe is a human being who makes decisions. And in fact, the Torah says about Moshe over and over, all of his big mistakes. Yan lo yemanten, asher mirisen espi, asher ma'alvan bi. We have numerous psukim in the Torah where Hashem criticized Moshe for making mistakes. Moshe gets angry. Moshe makes mistakes. Moshe, he hit the rock instead of speak to the rock. Moshe got angry a couple of times here and there. Moshe made major mistakes. The Torah magnifies his errors. He's not a malach. He made mistakes. Hashem says to Moshe, you're in violation of the most important thing, emunah. Chavakuk came along and said the most important thing that counts in this world is one thing, emunah. Bo Chavakuk v'hemida malachas v'tzadik be'emunaso yichya. The most fundamental principle of the Tayag Mitzvos is emunah. And what does Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. You know why? Because Yam Loi Hemantem Bi. You, Moshe, do not have faith in me. So Moshe obviously made mistakes. Okay, and the other Pesukim I mentioned, Hashem Ma'altem Bi, Hashem Mirisa Veski, Hashem says to Moshe, you rebelled against me. Ooh, unbelievable. Hashem is very tough. So Moshe is not a mouth, he's a human being. He makes mistakes. So if he makes mistakes, he can make a terrible mistake and tell Klal Yisrael that you're allowed to be Machal Shabbos. That you're allowed to live with an Ashes Ish. One day he's in a bad mood. Someone gets him upset. So Moshe says, I'm going to go, I'm going to mess you all up. I'm going to mess you guys, I'm going to punish you by having you do Averos, so Hashem should punish you all. So how can Moshe, Hashem say to Moshe, Moshe, I'm giving you a bracha, that the Jewish people are going to begam b'cho ya'aminu le'oilam. They're going to believe in you unconditionally forever. But Moshe made mistakes. So the Torah is Emes. Not, oh, so how do you say Moshe? By the way, Moshe doesn't say this anywhere. Moshe and Teres Emes is a song that it does not say Mekorach, B'nai Korach said that in regard to, it's all part of the question. How could Hashem give Moshe this bracha le'olma? This question is such a tough question. It is such a difficult question. The Meshech Chochma, because of this question, says things that are really mind-boggling. And he says, you have no choice but to say that from the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu was told this bracha, v'gam b'cho yaminu lo'olam, here are his words. These are the words of Meshech Chochma. Hashem Yisparach sholal mimenu habechira legamri v'nishar muchrach kemalachim. I'm surprised they didn't censor Meshech Chochma from this. He says, the question is so great, we have no choice to say. The moment that Moshe, that Hashem said these words, Hashem took away from Moshe Rabbeinu free will.
Because
Moshe turned into a malach.
It's a question of our belief. Do we believe that Moshe is honest? That's what's important.
So, here the pasuk says that Hashem told Klal Yisrael, the gam becha, the Jewish people will be, is it a command, is it a fact, is it a statement?
It's a fact.
Whatever. What do you mean? There's no human being that you believe in forever. Every human being, every rabbi has free will. There are many rabbis, Rachman al-Islam, that went off.
We have to believe it, as you say, because otherwise it can say, maybe he put something in the Torah of his own. It's not completely
open. That's right.
That's one of the Yisrael, this is the Rambam, that Moshe's MS, and he was done, but there's no one could be bigger than him. How do you know in the future no one could be bigger than him?
That's a side question. That's the question after the fact. But at this point in time, we're dealing now with the moment of Matan Torah. Okay, this thing, everything is MS after Moshe already died. In hindsight, we can say everything is MS. But at the time of Matan Torah, Hashem is telling Klal Yisrael, don't challenge Moshe. Moshe is perfect. Perfect. He's solid. The gam b'cho yaminu le'olma. The Meshech Chochma is so disturbed with this question, where he says that Moshe Rabbeinu at this point in time became a malach. I mean, that's a shocking thing to say. A shocking thing to say because of the question is so great. Now, there has to be more to this. Now, he says something over here. Who's saying this idea? The Meshech Chochma then goes on to say, I'm really embellishing what it says here. It seems the Meshech Chochma either says this outright, or alludes to this, or someone else says this, and I want to embellish it a little bit more. This is what I'm saying now is a tremendous chiddush to say this, and it's not simple at all, and it needs to be. It's very controversial. It needs to be refined, and that is. when you're dealing with Gedolei Yisrael, that are accepted to be Gedolei Yisrael, to which we have a duty, basically, every time we have a Gadol Yisrael, we view him to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Isn't that how it works? The Gemara says this. Everyone who rises to the stature of being recognized as a Gadol Yisrael is, in essence, our Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, Shaper Ka'amit. The argument of Gemara many times when you have people whose names are not Moshe, whose names are Shmuel, Yehuda, David, and when they say something, the response of the tzibur is Moshe, Shapir Ka'am, you have spoken well. A leader is, in the eyes of Klal Yisrael, our Moshe Rabbeinu. And our Moshe Rabbeinu, why is it that we've been brought up with a Ashkafa and a Nuna, the Gam B'choyaninu Le'olam? That's pasuk. That's the reason why. The reason why we've been brought up as children that you don't challenge Gedolei Yisrael. Call Asher Yomu Lecha Al Yimin L'Smo. Even if they tell you that your right hand is the left and the left hand is the right hand, in alternate reality, that's what it says. Alternate reality. You have to believe them. Where does that come from? It comes from this pasuk. The emunah pshuta of viewing a gadol to be infallible comes from the fact that we view our Gedolim to be in the place of Moshe, and regarding Moshe, the pasuk says, "V'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam." That's where it comes from. Now, wait a minute. Really? But Gedolei Yisrael make big mistakes. Let's not kid. Moshe Rabbeinu made big mistakes. Yan lo hamanti bi. Hashem says to Moshe, you rebelled against me. So here's the chiddush. There are two elements to a leader. There is his piskei halacha, his halachic decisions, or his, maybe even his advice. How far this goes, I do not know. And then there is his personal midos, his demeanor, his hanhogos, his midos as a person. A gadol be Yisrael, if and only if we accept him with the reverence as a gadol, is guaranteed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the pasuk of V'gam b'cha yaminu l'olam to never make a mistake, to be infallible regarding piskei halacha, and maybe even advice. If you ask a gadol be Yisrael of a new dilemma in this world, new technology has emerged, and the gadol be Yisrael paskins the halacha, he didn't make a mistake. V'gam b'cha, he is nichlal in the bracha, v'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam. Every single one of the Igros Moshe is infallible. Rav Moshe Feinstein was accepted by Klal Yisrael to be the Gadol Hador. Okay, by those who follow him. Okay, those who grew up in his image, in his shadow, infallible. In regard to what? In regard to what element of his life is he infallible? That is nichlal v'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam piskei halacha. In maybe even in advice, he asked him a question. Should I do this? Should I take this job? Should I take that job? Should I marry this woman? Should I not marry this woman? Should I do this or that? Even advice. V'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam. Everyone who achieves a stature of being accepted as a gadol today, I don't know if we even have that anymore today, but in the previous generations, there was such a stature. You're protected. You got malpractice insurance. Such malpractice insurance, you'll never make a mistake. But that doesn't mean, in any shape or form, that the person is perfect. In his personal life, he makes mistakes. In his personal life, he insults people. He's nasty. How can you be a gadol in halacha and be a nasty person? obviously he's not so nasty. Obviously the nastiness and the mistakes and error and the judgment and in maybe in being nichshol in noshim, which have taken down many great people, it's a weakness, a moment of the moment. Unfortunately, once they get caught once, they're finished. But it doesn't take away from their greatness. Fortunately, every person has a weakness. You have to split these two concepts. There's a siyata d'shmaya, a person who's recognized, has achieved a stature of being Moshe Shaper Ka'amrit, he gets a bracha, v'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam, you are infallible. But that's limited to matters of the cloud, matters of leadership, decision-making, halacha. But it doesn't mean they're perfect in their personal life. In their personal life, things that don't affect their leadership, they are fallible. You're human beings. They make mistakes. They make horrible mistakes. They have children they don't talk to. They have problems, weaknesses with nashim, weaknesses with eating. Okay, they're overweight. Okay, that's also a problem. Okay, they didn't pay their taxes on time. Maybe they made a mistake. Now, if they're so corrupt, that they belong in jail, there's no way in the world they would reach a madrega where Hashem would even allow them to reach a madrega. We're not talking about people whose weaknesses are so great, they're so massive. Obviously, someone who's so corrupt in their personal life, you're not a gadol. Don't tell me they go hand in hand. But this element, everyone makes mistakes. So maybe there was a weak moment in your life. A weak moment. The world doesn't come to an end. That's the thing that we make a mistake. When we look at Gedolei Yisrael and we train, they're infallible. And now this is new to me, and that's right, they are infallible. I never knew this. And it comes from Moshe Shaper Ka'amrit. It's a pasuk, V'gam b'cha yaminu lo'olam. And there is such an element of perfect emun in halacha and in leadership. But nowhere that stops. That's not for every dimension of their life. That's only for matters that affect the cloud. But in their personal life, there's a little problem here, a little problem there. And they know it. And they work on it. They struggle like all of us. Hayluchud v'hayluchud. It's not catch all. Okay, right at that, I want to tell you something, which another vart, which really blew my mind. This really is worth the price of admission for this vart alone. Part of this discussion, there's so much material here. Unfortunately, I just talk too much and I don't get to meet. But what?
Continue.
No, that's all right. But part of the conversation is Chazal. Chazal, which you have to answer the Chazal. You cannot ignore the Chazal. Chazal say, in doyle rabicha l'malach Hashem tzivakos yivakshu toira mipiv. V'imlav, al yivakshu toira mipiv. When you have to make a decision in your life, who will be your Rebbe? Who will be your guide? Who will be your inspiration? And you look around, there are many candidates to whom you can flock to. Chazal are very clear. Im doime rabicha lemalach Elohim tzivakos yivakshu toyer mipiv. V'imlav, if your Rebbe is not a malach Elohim tzivakos, stay away. What do you take out of this? That a Rebbe who is accepted to be the Rebbe of the world, Rosh Hashanah, Gadol B'Yisrael, whom, let's go back in previous generations, who were accepted by the Tzibur, have risen in stature to be people of stature, of dignity and greatness. The Chazal say, he is a Malach Elohim Tzivakos. Malachim generally don't make any mistakes. Malachim have an inside view of the world. They know, they're perfect. Malachim are perfect. So how can, now, Malachim are perfect in everything. I told you this whole Lama Shavar to separate the two, but they're perfect people, the Malachim. So doesn't that support the thesis, the belief in those people who view Gedolim to be perfect and you can't criticize them, you can't go discuss any of their deficiencies? What? Nobody would qualify then, right? No one would qualify. How can you, but you're saying this principle.
What are you saying? The next best thing?
You're giving, but this Chazal gives life to those people who want to believe this. Okay? You know, they're right over here in the book. He writes a lot about Rav Nosson Kamenetsky. Rav Nosson Kamenetsky wrote a book called The Making, a two-volume book, Making of a Gadol. It was banned.
Yes.
It was signed, it's shocking, by people who don't even read English. People who don't even read English. They put a cherem on the book. Rav Chaim Kinievsky, Rav Yashiv, Rav Steinman, and the whole thing is shocking. 15 people signed the letter banning the book. The biggest Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, they don't even read English. They never saw the book. How in the world did they issue a psak to ban the book? I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. He writes there a lot. He had a nur. He died. He passed away not that long ago. He passed away very, very recently. Nosson Kamenetsky, and he had a lot of agmas nefesh. He writes here in the book over there at Liechtenstein. He had people. He writes a lot of agmas nefesh. What they did to him. And what did he write in the book already? He wrote that once someone went to, it was learning by Aaron Kotler, and it was bothering him. He was asking too many questions in the shir, and this boy had this beautiful red hair. He was a redhead. So if Aaron Kotler, he was very frustrated with this boy that was asking Narisha questions. He called him a para aduma. A para aduma. The book was banned, right? Because they called him a part of it. He wrote another story where one of the Rashivas, when he was young, when he sneezed, when he wiped his nose, he went like this on his sleeve. On his sleeve. He wiped, come on, big deal, right? Another, what else? All these funny stories that he's like Narisha things, Narisha, big deal. Crazy stuff like this. And he brought out, there were a lot of things he brought out about certain, I don't remember all different stories he has over here, all different types, I don't remember all different details. I had a lot of that, so he writes there, honestly, right over there, I think he said this, so why is it like, why do people don't want to hear this? They don't want to hear this. There are people who like to rule, and there are people who want to be ruled. There's a sickness in society. You want to be ruled. You want to create this alternate fantasy, this society. You want to create for yourself a Balch. Now this Maimah Chazal is very troubling because it gives these people who want this, who want to be ruled, it gives them gasoline. Look what it says. Don't write a book telling me that my Rebbe called someone else a paraduma. Don't tell me these stories. I don't want to hear these stories. My Rebbe is the Malach Elokim Tzavakos. Okay, they have another story. A certain god, a certain, he used to play chess. And he was a sore, he wrote in the book, he was a sore loser. He wrote that in the book. This god was a sore loser.
Did he cheat?
That was like he cheated. For example, the author describes one great Torah figure as having been a sore loser when playing chess as a young man. Big deal, right?
As a young man.
Okay? He has other funny stories over here. Okay, he has stories about, we wrote about the Nitziv. They write, my uncle the Nitziv. Article.
Oh.
It's available, right? It's a club article. You can buy it.
It's not
in the catalog, but you can buy it.
But it's a revised version.
No, it's not. It's not a revised version. It's not. They did not revise the version one bit. It's available. You call up Art Scroll. Can I please order my uncle the Nitziv? Without hesitation, they'll send it to you.
And you get it? It's a revised version.
No, it's not a revised version. They have the whole... What was one line there in the whole thing? You know what it says there? That the Nitziv, he read a newspaper on Shabbos. Wow. He read the FJJ on Shabbos.
No,
believe me, reading the FJJ... is a lot worse than reading the newspaper that the Nitziv read. Wow. So the book was banned. Wow, wow. I mean, come on. There are people out there, like fake media. Fake.
Too.
What is going on? I don't know what's going on in this world. I don't know. He has a lot of stories like this. I don't know what. People, but this gives life, this gives energy, this Maim Chazal. It gives them, Imdoy Merabcha, Lamalach Elokim Tzivokas. We have to preserve. We have to preserve the image of the Gedoyle Yisrael as Doyme Lamalach Elokim Tzivokas. I know they're people, they're Balei Taiva, and they got Zlonim, and they're this, and they're that, and they churn their taxes, and they have a smartphone. I know. But it doesn't matter. In the public, the Klal Yisrael has to preserve the image of the Gedolei Yisrael as Doime Malach Elokim Tzivokos. That's how they're going to answer you, right? What?
There's got to be somewhere where you don't have to make the person a lowlife, just a normal person.
Okay, fine. A normal person.
Because normal
he
people...
He eats and he drinks and normal, he has to go to the Besakise.
Normal.
Normal, be normal.
Might be able to emulate other
100%. But there is an element in society.
Yes, that don't want to make decisions. They want
to. They don't want to make decisions.
Made for them, no independent thinking. That's them.
But he must put that aside. You know, I understand where they're coming from. There are people in society who very much want will agree to you. They're not naive. Klal Yisrael, they're not stupid. They'll agree to you 1,000,000%. That the Gedolim are human beings and have made terrible mistakes in their lives. They're human beings, but they believe very strongly and passionately that we have to whitewash anything they ever did, because of the need. Everything okay there? Because of the need to create an image for the better of Klal Yisrael. Is that okay there?
It's okay.
Because there's a need that in Klal Yisrael we have to admire the Gedolei Yisrael with a certain image. We know the emes, but we have to preserve. There's something to be said about that, as long as you don't lie outright. You just don't report all the garbage. There's something to be said about that. And the proof is, the proof that we have to create, go out of our way to create this image, is in Doime Rabcha L'malach Elokim Tzivokos. So even though we don't have amongst us Malach Elokim Tzivokos in this, we have to do the best to preserve the model, to preserve the image. And this Chazal is a very big support to their thesis. So he writes over here in the footnote an incredible, incredible response to that. It's worth the price of admission just for what he says here. He says, that's not what Chazal means. There's an alternate understanding of what that Chazal means. You know what? First of all, Malachi Elokim Tzivokos, we can show to you throughout Chazal, Malachim make terrible mistakes. Malachim also have free will. There's a whole literature on this. And Malachim make horrible, horrible mistakes. Even worse than man. You have the Malachim who came to save Lot. They said, we're going to destroy the city. You're going to destroy the city? So they were punished severely for that. And we have the people who came down from Shemayim. They came across some Noshim, the Mapilim. And they got carried away and they ended up living with these Noshim and they stayed on this world. Malachim make plenty of mistakes. Just as bad as people, even worse than people. So what then does the Chazal mean? This is incredible what he says. There's one mile a malach has that a person does not have. You know what that is? So what does a malach actually mean? A malach means a messenger. A messenger. A mission. One thing you know about a malach, he may make foolish mistakes, but he has a mission. An angel is here on a mission. He knows what his mission is. He knows what the mission is. Does he make mistakes? Yeah, he makes mistakes. He makes foolish mistakes. But he's possessed with a drive to do his mission. If you have a Rebbe, and the Rebbe sits back, I'm here to have make a good salary, some bonuses, to get, don't have to pay taxes, have a good life. Do I care about my students? Do I have a mission to teach, to give over, to make you better? Stay far away from this person. If you have a rabbi or a shiva who is possessed with passion, he has a mission to make the world a better place, a mission to teach, to daven, to inspire, to accomplish, even though he's a fool, even though he has incredible weaknesses, and it's a miracle they didn't lock him up already in jail 20 times for all of his nonsense and all of his sly remarks. It's okay. It's not okay. Don't get me wrong. It's not okay. He's a danger to society. But this is the type of Rebbe you want. You want a Rebbe that is possessed with a passion because he has a mission. The people who are trying to create a model, now we have to have a model of people that are infallible. Listen, that's none of our business. Listen, do whatever you want. But don't use this Maimer Chazal as fuel for your hashkaf. You're abusing the Maimer Chazal. When it says the Maimer Chazal, that does not mean you have to create a model that the rabbi, the Rashiv, the Gadol Hador is perfect. That's not what it means. It means the Gadol Hador has to have a mission. A mission, it's not for nothing that in the secular world, every organization has to have a mission statement. It's a lot to learn from the Chochmah of the Umay So'ilam. A mission, what's your mission statement? Every organization has a mission statement. It's kedai to read the mission statement. Every, you want to send your kid to a yeshiva. Why don't you read, what is the, go, let me see your mission, go imagine in the principal's office. Can I please see your mission statement of the yeshiva? You know, it says a lot. It says a lot. You hear what? You hear to make some money? It's a good business. You know, an elementary school is a very good business. If you know how to run a good elementary school, you can make a lot of money. Government money, parents pay tuition. You know, it's a good business. Is that what you're in for? Or do you have a mission? A mission to be mechanich the tinoika shel beis rabon. Im doy merabcha lemalach lekim tzivaka, it has a mission. You've actually turned me to bimlav. It has nothing to do with being perfect. Because the malachim themselves have major flaws. And again, there's a whole literature to describe that they have bechira, and they make mistakes, and they're not perfect on their level, they make, but they have a mission. All right, there's a lot more material here. And maybe Mirchem will continue. There's a really good, solid chidushim and ideas presented. And for another time. Zayg is in there, have a wonderful day.
I remember they have lectures every day in the summertime, July and August in the neighborhood. And once we had somebody honored, recognized Robin Flapasheri, very outspoken, and he said something came up in the night, this is years ago, that Moshe read the newspaper. And he said, I'll hear you, but it say that. So we're very good friends with one of his Tamil, who was a Muslim from Moshe. He said, God doesn't always talk much. No more, he's not a Talmud from Moshe. Moshe didn't read them. He read the Yiddish newspapers. It wasn't a sequel. He said, I don't know what he gets of telling the Barab in front of the Seabor. They didn't read. It's not true. It's just very.
Get the facts straight.
We go back to that old psak. If you go to the Pesach, if you go to the Baal Shkofa, to the Baal Maif, it's fine. But if you mix them up, if you go to Bnei Brak and you go for the
halacha,
you go to halacha for the Baal Maif and you go for the this.
But unfortunately, that's what happens. That's what's happening. There's also another element, like you know, I find very disturbing, is that I was told by a doctor who knows firsthand of Chaim and of Yitzhak Zilberstein.
Can't hear you.
I was told by a doctor who was first in Chaim Kalinowski, and I really did not take the vaccine.
Chaim Kanievsky
did not take the vaccine.
The old man, why should he take
it? Did not take it. Why? What do you mean? What do you mean? Every doctor in the world who will tell you.
No, they tell you it's a 10%, so he passed
and
it. For 10%, it doesn't
matter. And yet he's telling the Olam, everyone should take it. Pregnant women should take it.
Did you see the news letter just came out in all
no.
the shoes?
What?
There's a little booklet that's giving out against the vaccine.
I'm getting robocalls again. That's not my point. My point is you can't tell someone to take the vaccine if you didn't take the vaccine. I mean, isn't that pasher?
No.
Why is that pasher?
You go to a doctor for cancer. You need the doctor to have cancer first.
This is not cancer. This is a vaccine. And the doctors who are telling of Chaim that they're twisting his arm, that if you're not going to go tell the Olam to take the vaccine, we're going to cut off the funding from the yeshiva world.
Then he's not passing
the halacha, right? So they're telling them, and you also have to take the vaccine, because according to our opinion, you also need the vaccine. Just because you had corona, you had a very mild case, you also need to take the vaccine. And he's like, everyone, pregnant women, children, I don't know about children yet, he said children yet, but he says, Nashim and Mubarak should take it. Wait a minute. The doctor told, the same doctor that told you to tell everyone to take the vaccine is telling you also should take the vaccine. Avizik Zilberstein, he's the biggest, one of the biggest Pleiskin in Halacha.
So why doesn't he talk about that?
So what's going on? So you say there's a Gedolei Yisrael, there's the Urim V'Tumim. Someone said to me recently, you know, I think we should keep now shot. Chaim is the Urim V'Tumim. Just give me now a shot. You're not allowed to even ask the question. The same doctor that told of Chaim
that you must issue
a psak to Klal Yisrael to take the vaccine has told him you also have to take the vaccine.
But what you're saying is scares me something else. If he did it because they threatened him, whatever
for
it is,
money, that's possible.
Then there's pressure that he shouldn't have passed it.
Well, that's why everything is narrowed to show.
If you're going because you're not passing halacha, you're passing according to the threat.
But you know, but Rav Chaim is the undisputed Gadol Hador. There's a very very dangerous. Who says it's not a psak halacha here?
Right, that was saying. So he's not a psak hador. He's not. Shlomo Zalman was the basic. And Reb Chaim is a Gadol Hador.
Someone listened to me, a bunch of Rabbanim, and he showed me all the Rabbanim, that are telling you to take are politically connected, one after another. And everyone that's not politically connected, who's a Pesach, they I don't know. Do
you know what?
Don't
this whole
me.
Thing is very difficult because when we deal, we I'm going to have a little expertise with special needs, right?
Yeah.
So we went down to the Rabbanim and we took Dr. Abraham to the Williamsburg and we showed him and he said, before you give a person, a woman for depression or whatever, or some medication, look at the side effects. Go to a good doctor, or go to a Rav who knows the medication and say, give this person or don't give the person. Don't just decide. I have a lot of people who are on the
list. Expert, needing medical expertise.
Right, but the Rabbanim say, no, we're B'dayim, we know how to paskin. So they're not. You've got to go to the guy who is the expert on the field. And certain people,
everyone quotes of Herschel Schachter.
Malkiel Kotler is not a person.
I don't want to go Hillel Schachter.
Okay.
Everyone is quoting of Herschel Schachter. He said very clearly, he says, the Rabbanim, it is the Messiah in Klal Yisrael to have emuna, to believe what the Chachmei Umar Sa'olam say regarding
right, so Rav Hershel Shachter is a gadol, but when it comes to Ashkafa, it doesn't mean that his Ashkafa
so
is...
So this is what we've been doing for all generations, and today the facts are Rav Minyan, the words are Rav Minyan, the Rav Binyan of the Chachmei Umar Sa'olam in the field of medicine, say take it, that's enough. Adkan, I do not need to know to go to medical school to issue a psak halach in this case. If Rav Binyan of the Chachmei Umar Sa'olam have told that it's good, that's it. We don't need to know anything more.
Shkoyach. You know, I'm really enjoying this. I'm going to miss tomorrow. I'm going up for a bar mitzvah for one
thing.
But I'm going to miss this. It's really, really shkoyach.
You know, I once had, from an art school, I had books there from the library.
Someone in our group just, Diamond,
had a wedding this week, and in 2 weeks another grandchild.
So, I remember when they were cleaning out the R.J.J. library, they had a bunch of books that they were doing. So I took the book out. Fantastic books for the unfailing world. It's an autobiography, but like an autograph. Fantastic book. I will lend it to you. I have it. It's, I can't get any more. It was an unbelievable person. He's known as the first American war author that traveled. On the track. He's known as the first American war author that traveled. He was born in 1860 in New York. And the story is he born to a reformed family. And he had the talents of being a orator, a typical man who was a German seminary wrestler. While he was there, he decided to visit his mother's side in Poland. And got very enthralled. And decided to let drop the whole thing. And after a couple years, he came back in North America. So Templeman said they were very upset with him. Templeman had to stay in the city of Pennsylvania. Anyway, you can see with the manual, and he said that led the services were in the same shape in office. And they said, what's going on? Why are you? He said, we know you said men and women were together, you know, when your head's not covered and nothing. So then he came to the office, he said, okay, we bought. He found it, he found the part he said, which is a lovely stipulation that Templeman can never become anything other than North America. He's a trailblazer, one of the founders of the EU, Exactly. So I sent them here with the guy who writes for art school. I said, there's nobody else in that heard of him. So he said, you know, it's a very inspirational book. It's a great book. But it's not good because, you know, he was that tiger from the old time. He was an old time rabbi. He was from the founders of YU. He was the founder of JTS before he was Orthodox. And he was exposed to Mordechai Kaplan. Anyway,